Chapter 13. After a long time, Father Field said,
Vulcan II was only a computing mechanism. It had no motives, no drives. Why would it act to impair Vulcan III?
Because Vulcan III menaced it, Barris said. Vulcan II was as much alive as Vulcan III, no more and no less. It was created originally to do a certain job, and Vulcan III interfered with its doing that job, just as the withholding of data by Jason Dill interfered with Vulcan III's doing its job.
How did Vulcan III interfere with Vulcan II's doing its job?
Father Field said.
By supplanting it, Vera said.
Field said,
But I'm the head of the movement now. Vulcan II no longer exists.
Rubbing his chin, he said,
There isn't a wire or a tube or a relay of Vulcan II intact.
You did a thorough professional job, Barra said.
The man's head jerked.
You destroyed Vulcan II, Barra said, to keep Jason Dill from knowing. Isn't that so?
No, Field said finally. It isn't so. This is all a wild series of guesses on your part. You have no evidence. This is the typical insane slander generated by Unity. These mad charges, dreamed up and bolstered and embroidered.
Once again, Barris noticed, the man had lost his regional accent, and his vocabulary, his use of words, had in this period of stress greatly improved. Marion Fields piped,
It's not true. My father founded the movement.
Her eyes blazed with helpless, baffled fury at Barris.
I wish I hadn't brought you here.
What evidence do you have? Field said.
I saw the skill with which you rebuilt that ruined hammer, Barris said. It amounted to mechanical genius on your part. With ability like that, you could name your own job with Unity. There are no repairmen on my staff in New York capable of work like that. The normal use Unity would put you to with such ability would be servicing the Vulcan series. Obviously, you know nothing about Vulcan III, and Vulcan III is self-servicing. What does that leave but the older computers? And Vulcan I hasn't functioned in decades, and your age is such that, like Jason Dill, you would naturally have been a contemporary of Vulcan II rather than...
Conjecture, Field said.
Yes, Barris admitted.
Logic, deduction, based on the spurious premise that I had anything to do with any of the Vulcan series. Did it ever occur to you that there might have been alternate computers designed by someone other than Nat Greenstreet? That competent crews might have been put to work at...
From behind Barris, a voice, a woman's voice, said sharply,
Tell him the truth, Father. Don't lie for once.
Rachel Pitt came around to stand by Barris. Astonished to see her, Barris started to his feet.
My two daughters,
Field said. He put his hand on Marion Field's shoulder, and then, after a pause, he put his other hand on the shoulder of Rachel Pitt.
Marion and Rachel, he said to Barris. The younger stayed with me, was loyal to me. The older had ambitions to marry a Unity man and live a well-to-do life with all the things that money can buy. She started to come back to me a couple of times, but did you really come back?
He gazed meditatively at Rachel Pitt.
I wonder. It doesn't sound like it.
Rachel said,
I'm loyal to you, Father. I just can't stand any more lies.
I'm telling the truth,
Father Field said in a harsh, bitter voice.
Barris accuses me of destroying Vulcan II to keep Jason Dill from knowing about the relationship between the old computer and the movement. Do you think I care about Jason Dill? Did it ever matter what he knew? I destroyed Vulcan II because it wasn't running the movement effectively. It was holding the movement back, keeping it weak.
It wanted the movement to be nothing but an extension of itself, like those hammers of Vulcan III, an instrument without life of its own.
His voice had gained power. His jaw jutted out, and he confronted Barris and Rachel defiantly. The two of them moved involuntarily away from him, and closer to each other. Only Marion Fields remained with him.
"I freed the movement," Fields said. "I freed humanity and made the movement an instrument of human needs, human aspirations. Is that wicked?"
He pointed his finger at Barris and shouted,
"And before I'm finished, I'm going to destroy Vulcan III as well, and free mankind from it, too. From both of them. First the older one, and next the big one, the new one. Is that wrong? Are you opposed to that? If you are, then God damn it, go join them at the fortress. Go join Reynolds."
Barris said, It's a noble ideal, what you're saying. But you can't do it. It's impossible. Unless I help you." Hunched forward in his chair, Father Field said,
"All right, Barris. You came here to do business. What's your deal?"
Raising his head, he said hoarsely,
"What do you have to offer me?"
Barris said, "I know where the fortress is. I've been to it. Dill took me there. I can find it again. Without me, you'll never find it. At least not in time. Not before Vulcan III has developed such far-reaching offensive weapons that nothing will remain of life above ground."
"You don't think we'll find it?" Field said.
"In 15 months, Barris said, "you've failed to. Do you think you will in the next 2 weeks?" Presently, Father Field said,
"More like 2 years. We started looking from the very start."
He shrugged.
"Well, Director, what do you want in exchange?"
"Plenty," Barris said grimly. "I'll try to outline it as briefly as I can." After Barris had finished, Father Fields was silent.
"You want a lot," he said finally.
"That's right."
"It's incredible. You dictating terms to me? How many in your group?"
5 or 6. Fields shook his head.
"And there are millions of us, all over the world."
From his pocket, he produced a much-folded map. Spreading it out on the counter, he said,
"We've taken over in America, in Eastern Europe, in all of Asia and Africa. It seemed only a question of time before we had the rest. We've been winning so steadily."
He clenched his fist around a coffee mug on the counter, and then suddenly grabbed it up and hurled it to the floor. The brown coffee oozed thickly out.
"Even if you did have sufficient time on your side," Barris said, "I doubt if you could ultimately have defeated Unity. It's hopeless to imagine that a grassroots revolutionary movement can overthrow a modern bureaucratic system that's backed up with modern technology and elaborate industrial organization. 100 years ago, your movement might have worked, but times have changed. Government is a science conducted by trained experts."
Studying him with animosity, Field said,
"To win, you have to be on the inside."
"You have to know someone on the inside," Barris said. "And you do. You know me. I can get you in where you will be able to attack the main trunk, not merely the branches."
"And the trunk," Field said, "is Vulcan III. Give us credit for knowing that, at least. That thing has always been our target."
He let out his breath raggedly.
"All right, Barris. I agree to your terms."
Barris felt himself relax, but he kept his expression under control.
"Fine," he said. "You're surprised, aren't you?"
Field said.
"No," he said. Relieved. I thought possibly you might fail to see how precarious your position is.
Bringing forth a pocket watch, Fields examined it.
What do you want for the attack on the fortress? Weapons are still in short supply with us. We're mainly oriented around manpower.
There are weapons back at Geneva.
How about transportation?
We have 3 high-speed military cruisers. They'll do.
Barris wrote rapidly on a piece of paper.
A small concentrated attack by skillful men, experts hitting at the vital center. 100 well-chosen men will do. Everything depends on the first 10 minutes in the fortress. If we succeed, it'll be right away. There will be no second chance.
Fields gazed at him intently.
Barris, do you really think we have a chance? Can we really get to Vulcan 3?
His grease-stained hands twisted.
For years, I've thought of nothing else. Smashing that satanic mass of parts and tubes.
We'll get to him, Barris said.
Fields collected the men that Barris needed. They were loaded into the cruiser, and Barris at once headed back toward Geneva, Fields accompanying him. Halfway across the Atlantic, they passed an immense swarm of hammers streaking toward helpless, undefended North America. These were quite large, almost as large as the cruiser. They moved with incredible speed, disappearing almost at once. A few minutes later, a new horde appeared, these like slender needles. They ignored the ship and followed the first group over the horizon.
New types, Vera said. He's wasting no time.
The Unity control building was still in friendly hands. They landed on the roof and hurried down the ramps into the building. On orders from Fields, the healers had ceased attacking. But now, hammers swarmed constantly overhead, diving down and twisting agilely to avoid the roof guns. Half of the main structure was in ruins, but the guns fired on, bringing down the hammers when they came too close.
It's a losing battle, Daly muttered. We're short on ammunition. There seem to be an endless number of the damn things.
Barris worked rapidly. He supplied his attack force with the best weapons available, supplies stored in the vaults below the control building. From the 5 directors, he selected Pegler and Chai and 100 of the best-trained troops.
I'm going along, Field said. If the attack fails, I don't want to stay alive. If it succeeds, I want to be part of it.
Barris carefully uncrated a manually operated fission bomb.
This is for him.
He weighed the bomb in the palm of his hand. It was no larger than an onion.
My assumption is that they'll admit me and possibly Chai and Pegler. We can probably persuade them that we're coming over to rejoin Unity. At least we'll be able to get part of the distance in.
Anyhow, you hope so, Fields said curtly.
At sunset, Barris loaded the 3 cruisers with the men and equipment. The roof guns sent up a heavy barrage to cover their takeoff. Hammers in action nearby at once began following the ships as they rose into the sky.
We'll have to shake them, Barris said.
He gave quick orders. The 3 cruisers shot off in different directions, dividing up rapidly. A few hammers tagged them a while and then gave up.
I'm clear,
Chai in the 2nd cruiser reported.
Clear,
Pegler in the 3rd said. Barris glanced at the older man beside him. Behind them, the ship was crowded with tense, silent soldiers, loaded down with weapons, squatting nervously in a mass as the ship raced through the darkness.
Here we go, Barris said.
He swung the ship in a wide arc. Into the communications speaker, he ordered,
We'll reform for the attack. I'll lead. You 2 come behind.
Are we close?
Fields asked, a queer expression on his face.
Very.
Barris studied the ship's controls.
We should be over it in a moment. Get set.
Barris dived. Pegler's ship whipped through the darkness behind him, lashing toward the ground below. Chai's ship shot off to the right and headed directly over the fortress. Hammers rose in vast swarms and moved toward Chai's ship, separating and engulfing it.
Hang on!
Barris gasped. The ground rose, Landing brake screamed. The ship hit, spinning and crashing among the trees and boulders.
Out!
Barris ordered, pulling himself to his feet and throwing the hatch release. The hatches slid back and the men poured out, dragging their equipment into the cold night darkness. Above them in the sky, Chai's ship fought with the hammers. It twisted and rolled, firing rapidly. More hammers rose from the fortress, great black clouds that swiftly gained altitude. Pegler's ship was landing. It roared over them and crashed against the side of a hill a few hundred yards from the other defense wall of the fortress. The heavy guns of the fortress were beginning to open up. A vast fountain of white burst loose, showering rocks and debris on Barris and Fields as they climbed out of their ship.
Hurry, Barris said. Get the bores going.
The men were assembling two gopher bores. The first had already whined into action. More tactical atomic shells from the fortress struck near them. The night was lit up with explosions. Barris crouched down.
How are you making out?
He shouted above the racket, his lips close to his helmet speaker.
All right, Pegler's voice said weakly in his earphones. We're down and getting out the big stuff.
That'll hold off the hammers,
Barris said to Fields. He peered up at the sky.
I hope Chai...
Chai's ship rolled and spun, trying to evade the ring of hammers closing around it. Its jets smoked briefly, a direct hit. The ship wobbled and hesitated.
Drop your men,
Barris ordered into his phones.
You're right over the fortress.
From Chai's ship showered a cloud of white dots, men in jumpsuits drifting slowly toward the ground below. Hammers screeched around them. The men fired back with pencil beams. The hammers retreated warily.
Chai's men will take care of the direct attack, Barris explained. Meanwhile, the bores are moving.
Umbrella almost ready,
a technician reported.
Good, they're beginning to dive on us. Their screen probes must have spotted us.
The fleets of screaming hammers were descending, hurtling toward the ground. Their beams stabbed into the trees and ignited columns of flaming wood and branches. One of Pegler's cannons boomed. A group of hammers disappeared, but more took their places. An endless torrent of hammers, rising up from the fortress like black bats. The umbrella flickered purple. Reluctantly, it came on and settled in place. Vaguely, beyond it, Barris could make out the hammers circling in confusion. A group of them entered the umbrella and were silently puffed out. Barris relaxed.
Good. Now we don't have to worry about them.
Gophers are halfway along,
the leader of the bore team reported. Two immense holes yawned, echoing and vibrating as the gopher bores crept into the earth. Technicians disappeared after them. The first squad of armed troops followed them cautiously, swallowed up by the earth.
We're on our way, Barris said to Fields.
Standing off by himself, Father Fields surveyed the trees, the line of hills in the distance.
No visible sign of the fortress, he murmured. Nothing to give it away.
He seemed deep in thought, as if barely aware of the battle in progress.
This forest, this perfect place, I would never have known.
Turning, he walked toward Barris. Seeing the look on the man's face, Barris felt deep uneasiness.
What is it?
He said. Field said,
I've been here before.
Yes,
Barris said.
Thousands of times. I worked here most of my life.
The man's face was stark.
This is where Vulcan II used to be.
His hands jerked aimlessly.
This was where I came to destroy Vulcan II.
Nodding his head at a massive moss-covered boulder, he said,
I walked by that, to the service ramp. They didn't even know the ramp still existed. It was declared obsolete years ago, abandoned and shut off, but I knew about it.
His voice rose wildly.
I can come and go any time I want. I have constant access to that place. I know a thousand ways to get down there.
Barris said,
But you didn't know that Vulcan III was down there, too, at the deepest level. They didn't acquaint your crew with...
I didn't know Jason Dill,
Field said.
I wasn't in a position to meet him as an equal, as you were.
So, now you know, Barris said.
You gave me nothing, Field said. You had nothing to tell me that I didn't already know.
Coming slowly toward Barris, he said in a low voice,
I could have figured it out in time, once we had tried every other place.
In his hand, a pencil beam appeared, gripped tightly. Keeping himself calm, Barris said,
But you still won't get in, Father. They'll never let you in. They'll kill you long before you penetrate all the way to Vulcan III. You'll have to depend on me.
Pointing to his sleeve, he indicated his director's stripe.
Once I get in there, I can walk up and down those corridors. No one will stop me because they're part of the same structure I'm part of, and I'm in a position of authority equal to any of them, Reynolds included.
Field said,
Any of them, except for Vulcan III.
Off to the right, Pegler's cannon thundered as the fleets of hammers turned their attention on them. The hammers dived and released bombs. An inferno of white pillars checkered across the countryside, moving toward Pegler's ship.
Get your umbrella up!
Barris shouted into his helmet speaker. Pegler's umbrella flickered. It hesitated. A small atomic bomb cut across dead center. Pegler's ship vanished. Clouds of particles burst into the air, metal and ash showering over the flaming ground. The heavy cannon ceased abruptly.
It's up to us, Barris said.
Over the fortress, the first of Chai's men had reached the ground. The defense guns spun around, leaving Barris's ship and focusing on the drifting dots.
They don't have a chance, Fields muttered.
No.
Barris started toward the first of the two tunnels.
But we have.
Ignoring the pencil beam in the older man's hand, he continued, his back to Fields. Abruptly, the fortress shuddered. A vast tongue of fire rolled across it. The surface fused in an instant. The wave of molten metal had sealed over the fortress.
They cut themselves off, Barris said. They've closed down.
He shook himself into motion and entered the tunnel, squeezing past the power leads to the gopher. An ugly cloud of black rolled up from the sea of glimmering slag that had been the surface of the fortress. The hammers fluttered above it uncertainly, cut off from the levels beneath. Barris made his way along the tunnel, pushing past the technicians operating the gopher. The gopher rumbled and vibrated as it cut through the layers of clay and rock toward the fortress. The air was hot and moist. The men worked feverishly, directing the gopher deeper and deeper. Torrents of steaming water poured from the clay around them.
We must be close.
Field's voice came to him from behind.
We should emerge near the deepest level, Barris said.
He did not look to see if the pencil beam was still there. He kept on going. The gopher shrieked. Its whirring noise tore into metal. The bore team urged it forward. The gopher slashed into a wall of steel and reinforced stressed plastic, and then slowed to a stop.
We're there, Barris said.
The gopher shuddered. Gradually, it inched forward. The leader of the team leaned close to Barris.
The other gopher's through into the fortress, but they don't know exactly where.
All at once, the wall collapsed inward. Liquid steel pelted them, sizzling. The soldiers moved ahead, pushing through the gap. Barris and Fields hurried with them. The jagged metal seared them as they squeezed through. Barris stumbled and fell, rolling in the boiling water and debris. Putting his pencil beam away, Fields pulled him to his feet. They glanced at each other, neither of them speaking. And then they looked about them, at the great corridor that stretched out, lit by the recessed lighting familiar to both of them. The lowest level of the fortress.